You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is Trident Talk.
Swing, sock, way deep out to left field, catch a ball.
From foul pole to foul pole.
Reaches up, dives, and he makes the catch. Holy smokes.
A deeper look at your Seattle Mariners on the Seattle Mariners Radio Network.
Happy Sunday morning. Welcome to Trident Talk. Great to have you with us today at a sunny T-Mobile Park in front of the Mariners and the Cubs, game three of the series. Gary Hill here alongside Aaron Goldsmith. Brady Robick in our Seattle studios. We've got a fun show on tap this afternoon before Shannon Dreher and the pregame show coming up an hour from right now. Speaking of Shannon, she will sit down with Bryce Miller. He's off to a great start this season. And, you know, he has really changed how he is going about things. We'll get some details from Bryce Miller coming up in a few minutes. Really great conversation. Tomorrow is Jackie Robinson Day. We'll celebrate it here at the ballpark. We'll celebrate it on Trident Talk today. We'll hear from Bob Kendrick, the best storyteller in baseball right now, for my money. He's going to talk about Jackie Robinson and his influence. And I think the single best story we've ever heard on our air, I know a strong statement, but we're going to revisit a conversation between Aaron Goldsmith and Vin Scully about Jackie Robinson. That one is not to be missed. That will come up in a few minutes. The great Chicago Cubs broadcaster, John Bugshambi, is here with the Cubs, obviously. Of course, you know him from ESPN Radio, national broadcast. We're going to sit down with Boog and talk some broadcasting. He's going to share some great stories, including one about Scott Servais that you'll want to hear as well. So that's coming up in a few minutes. We're going to start the conversation, though, with Tyson Miller, one of the newest Mariners, pitching out of the bullpen. Had a really interesting journey last year, and he's going to talk about, well, facing the Cubs yesterday. He came up with the Cubs. We're going to talk about his favorite baseball moment on a Major League Baseball field. Most guys talk about debuts. He won't. He'll talk about a different game. So we'll talk to Tyson Miller. That's what we'll start with on this show, the newest Mariners reliever. Let's start the conversation.
I have to start with last year with you, because I was reading your transaction log last year, and it was exhausting just to read. So I got to know this experience for you. So to set the table for fans, correct me if I get anything wrong, but I'll just run through it real quick. So you started the season with the Brewers. Mm-hmm. You were recalled four times from Nashville to Milwaukee. You were traded to the Dodgers. You appeared with L.A. You pitched for Oklahoma City. Then you went to the Mets. You pitched for them. You pitched for Syracuse as well. And then back to the Dodgers again, mm-hmm. a different number and another appearance, which I like. So six teams, multiples with each team, 10 games, seven call-ups. I mean, that is an incredible journey last year.
Yeah.
How do you describe everything you went through?
Just part of it, you know. Everyone has their own stories, but yeah, last year was quite a year. Yeah, All-Star break, went from DFA trade to the Dodgers, OKC for a week, up for a little bit, sent down. We trade for Yarbrough, so DFA, picked up by Mets, AAA, go up for one game, get a win against the Pirates, come back down, DFA a few days later, re-picked up by Dodgers, go to LA, pitch one game, sent down the next day, or DFA the next day, outright at AAA, and was there the rest of the year.
That's unreal.
Yeah, it was long one.
As you're going through it, is it exhausting, or is it, what's the mindset?
Mentally, yeah. Mentally it is. Physically, it's hard to get consistent workouts. I mean, if the hotel has a good gym, I know I was in Syracuse waiting to find out if I was going to get repicked up by someone else or just stay there. So I was like throwing plyo balls against the wall next to the freeway at the team hotel that they had out there in Syracuse. Yeah, that was fun.
The other part I was thinking about, every organization has different coaches and different philosophies. Is it hard being with that many different organizations during the course of a season? Are there things that they want you to do differently than the last org was trying to get you to do? Is there some of that going on too at the same time?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you get where you're in the same org for a while and they say like new eyes sometimes help. And mm-hmm. then last year was a lot of different people, different things, trying to figure stuff out. And throwing so inconsistently. I mean, the month of July and going into August, I was averaging like 5 days between outings.
Wow.
Just off the mound, inconsistent catch play throughout the day, like plyo balls on the wall. So, you know, when you're trying to be consistent on the mound and then a team picks you up and then they're like, one day you're good, one day you're not good, like, I mean, it's hard to keep consistency with mechanics and throwing wise.
So. Totally, I get that. I mean, I guess the positives, hey, you're getting the call to the majors. There's teams that want you. I mean, that's
always the positive.
Right, yeah.
There's teams that are still interested and want me, so.
For sure.
I'm doing something right.
Well, you've looked great. How do you feel like gone for you?
That's going well. The coaching staff here has helped just simplify things for me and help me stay out of my mind, I guess, more. It's more just go out there and throw. Instead of trying to hit a spot, trying to do this, trying to do that kind of thing, it's like just go out and do. So
yeah, I'm always fascinated with this conversation because we've seen a lot of pitchers have success here the last few years, and it's interesting because it's always a little different. Sometimes it's a big adjustment, sometimes it's new pitches. Like it's different for every guy. Is it the same stuff that you're throwing years past? Just being more aggressive with it? How would you say things are a little different for you compared to years past?
Yeah, being more aggressive with everything, and they show you what you're really good at doing and why you're really good at it. So helps you understand and build that confidence of like, okay, I can start hitting these spots more without actually trying. It's more just like we're feeling it and it's feeling more natural. And yeah, it's just more building that confidence with getting knowing you can hit those spots with pitches.
What do you think you're best at?
Filling up the zone. My release height and just delivery, it's a little weird, unique, they say. Mm-hmm. So just trying to make guys uncomfortable in the at-bats is what it's mainly about, trying to get ugly swings.
Yeah, you've gotten a few of those too. Your slider in particular, how did you develop what has, in our eyes, has been a great pitch for you?
That was one of the big things talking with Woody was, for me, I was doing too much of trying to manipulate movement and trying to create movement with wrist action or with a certain grip kind of thing, or trying to rip it, or like people say, put your seatbelt on, kind of think of it that way. And so I would cut it off a little bit. So now we're back to looking at it where my reach and extension is a lot better with it. So I'm getting more out with the pitch and I'm more ripping it instead of being hesitant and trying to aim with it.
Oh, that's super fascinating.
Yeah, sometimes you just, like we said, just rip it.
Okay. So just throwing it as hard as you can? Is that what you mean by rip it?
Like thinking that way without actually doing it. In a way, like overthinking pitches and trying to create movement, you, in a way, create bad movement with it, and you're not letting the pitch do its thing. You're not letting the seams catch it in a way where it creates the weirder movement with it, like with the sweeper sliders that most people have. So yeah, nowadays it's just trying to rip it instead of manipulate or get under the ball or create wrist action. It was like, don't overthink it, just throw it hard and go from there. Sometimes you gotta run before you walk.
Okay. And we've seen you go multiple innings. It seems pretty comfortable to you to go multiples.
Yeah. I mean, I was a starter whole career up until, 22 was when I would start going hybrid a little bit.
Okay.
A little long relief, sometimes start in AAA if we needed it. But yeah, I was long relief since then.
You grew up in California. Did you have a favorite team growing up?
Yeah, growing up I was a Giants fan.
Okay.
Yeah. Parents were from Northern California.
Okay. So. I 49ers fan too, right? Mm-hmm. I won't say that too loud for Seahawks fans.
It's okay. We don't have to talk about that.
Do you have a favorite guy or two growing up?
Lincecum was one of my favorites.
Nice.
Him and Matt Cain.
Okay, UW guy. See, it came back. Mm-hmm. So the 49ers fan, but also Lincecum fan. So that's great. Who were kind of your influences growing up? You're a big league pitcher. You made it to the majors. Like, who are the people along the way that you look at that helped you get here?
Growing up, I had my pitching coach, Brian Weisler, back home. He played minor league ball with the Indians back in the day, or Guardians now.
Mm-hmm.
And my college coach, Coach Adcock at Cal Baptist, he was college pitcher, great coach. He helped me just kind of develop, like, get that dog instead of more developing pitching wise, he's like created pitchers of the mindset more of being a dominant pitcher. So the mental side of it, he was really good at.
Your brother played football, right? Was it always baseball for you?
Yeah, baseball always.
Okay.
I grew up a skinny kid, and they wanted me to play quarterback in high school, and I was like, no, I saw that offensive line. And,
yeah. Well, I assume you had the arm for quarterback. You just didn't want to take the beating. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I would throw a lot to my brother because he was a wide receiver, or tight end kind of thing. So.
Okay, that's perfect. Well, I think you made the right choice.
Yeah.
So that works out. What's been your favorite moment on a field in the big leagues?
Usually everyone says debut, but mine was – in 2020, so I didn't get to see a full packed Wrigley.
Yeah,
sadly. But my first win was with the Rangers in Seattle. But yeah, it was cool. It was the first time my mom got to see me not give up 6 runs in a game in person. So,
hey, I think you went 3 1/3 scoreless in that game against the Mariners, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was got my first strikeout and first win that game.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Did you keep anything from it?
Yeah, I still got the baseball, and they got the lineup card and all that.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay, where's the baseball now?
It's back home. I got all my stuff trying to keep it all together back there.
Oh, nice. Are you a memorabilia guy? Do you tend to try and keep stuff? Or just like significant?
Cool stuff, yeah. Significant stuff, yeah.
Nice.
Like last year, I got my first ABS strikeout because the guy took too long, so I kept that baseball. That was cool.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
You kept the baseball from the ABS strikeout?
Yeah.
Okay, so I got to know.
When you walk off with the ball, it's like usually they keep the ball, throw it back. So I was like, I kept the ball because he was like, time.
So, okay. I got to run through the scenario. So you're holding the ball. The umpire rings him up, and it was at number 3, so you just walk to the dugout and keep the ball?
Yeah, it was strike 3. The guy took
so
too long.
Great.
He took too long. It was like a 1-2 count. I was like, oh, cool, first strikeout.
And you kept the ball?
Yeah.
That is so great. I almost feel like you should like have it signed by the umpire or something.
Yeah, I don't know. That might be a little tampering.
You think that's – okay, yeah, that's going a little too far.
Yeah. We got to be friendly with them, but I don't know about that.
Maybe the opposing hitter, but maybe that would be a little touchy too. So
yeah.
I get that. It's funny because you're going back and forth last year, right? You're playing under all kinds of different rules during the course of the season. What did you think about ABS pitching to it?
The automated zone.
Yeah.
Still needs work.
Yeah.
Up in the zone was the big thing. Guys knew the first 3 days of a series, they can get the top of the zones a ball every time. So that was a big thing. But inside outside, I think it was good. I just think the height of the zone needs to be fixed a little bit and actually measured if we're going to use it.
Was it tricky for you going back and forth?
Some guys struggled with it.
Okay.
I mean, the biggest thing for me was I think I got clocked coming in Colorado with the Brewers for the my last warm-up pitch, I guess, was within 40 seconds. And in AAA, I think at the time it was you had to be done before 30 seconds. So that's what I thought it was. And they're like, no, it's 40. And I was like, okay. So I started 1-0 with, like, bases loaded in Colorado. Yeah.
What happened? Did you get out of it?
No. I want to say it was, like, a flyout. And then Blackman got, like, a flipped one over the second baseman, the two guys scored. And I was like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah. I mean, it already feels like you're starting 1-0 in Colorado as it is on its own, so that's not helpful.
It's really fun to throw there.
Yeah. Did you get to spend any time looking around Seattle at all while you were
in town? Yeah, we went to the pier or the marketplace down there, and then Culberson and some of the guys, they wanted to see the there's one of the shops, the memorabilia shop with all the baseball cards down there. One of the guys has a shop, so he wanted to check out, see if they had any cool cards. We got like lunch out there. I think we had like an off day one of the days there, but yeah, it was really nice.
There was Tyson Miller getting to meet the newest Mariners reliever. Came up with the Chicago Cubs, debuted with the Chicago Cubs, pitched against the Cubs last night. He's looked really good in a Mariners uniform. We'll talk to the other Miller pitcher for the Mariners, Bryce Miller, coming up later on in the program. Coming up next, though, we'll chat with John Boog-Shambi. That's going to come up right after this.
You're listening to Trident Talk on the Seattle Mariners Radio Network.
Nico back in, awaiting a 1-1. Here it is. In the air, out to left field. That one back. Gone! Grand slam! Nico Horner with the bases full. And the Cubs break it open here in the eighth.
Yes, one of the truly great voices in our game, John Boog Shambi, the voice of the Cubs on television, ESPN Radio, this World Series does it all. One of the great voices. This Triton Talk brought to you by Chevy Silverado and Silverado HD. Aaron Goldsmith and I had a chance to sit down with Boog. We talk, we share some really fun stories. Also talk about how he goes about his craft.
You're in a really unique position, Boog, because you call games on TV for what I would call like a blue blood franchise in baseball, right? The Chicago Cubs. But then you also have this really fun and incredible radio component to your career. You're now the voice of the World Series and have been for a little while now. Those jobs couldn't be any more different, right?
Yes.
How much do you like the fact that those are so polar opposite professions?
I love that I get to do both. I love that I still get a chance to do radio. And I think the Cubs component has been a process, and connecting with my partner has been a huge part of it, trying to connect with the audience / fan base. In the end, that's just being authentic, right? But I love, you and I have spoken enough about the radio part of things and just the mechanical aspect of it, really sort of drilling down on what your base is as a radio play-by-play guy, and then expanding into personality, information, stories, that type of thing. But I love that I get to do both. It's awesome.
What do you think makes a great radio broadcaster?
I think it depends on the person. You know, when I sit there and listen to John Miller, there is a uniqueness to the storytelling, the cadence, the way he uses his voice. There's humor involved. And then, you know, when I think back to somebody like Marty Brenneman and how he delivered it, I don't think that there is one single thing, but I do think probably as much as anything that the personality and the people connect to, you know, the guy on the radio. Now, I also would say, you know, sort of back to Goldie's question, the idea of I'm doing national radio, so I the first thing I'm trying to do is deliver the game and the details. And I think the local is where you're, you know, looking to connect and probably have a touch more fun. But I don't think that there's a singular answer. I think that, you know, you're trying to deliver who you are. I think that is the thing, whether it's radio or TV, to be honest.
When I listen on radio or on TV, can you give me the pitch? Like,
yeah.
Like only Boog can do. Can you give me one?
Because Aaron Boone will still every... Did I just name drop? I did. But that's not... I worked with him. So, but he will just every once in a while send me a voice text that just says, the pitch.
Yes. So I was watching a telecast of yours the other day with the Cubs, of course.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, Boog sounded like he was on radio right there. Like, that's what Boog would say if he was on radio. But Boog's saying it on TV. Do you morph? Or is it just you just want sometimes drop a radio call into a TV call?
That's the second part. Is sometimes I'll just drop a radio call into a TV call. I think that there are times when from a timing standpoint in a big spot, you kind of want to command the, okay, this is the play-by-play spot, and I'll use it as a fun way to make it more radio-ish, but also as a mechanism to just, this is the call. So
I almost laughed out loud when I heard you do. I'm like, are we going to pause for station identification next?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I still... I don't know if I'll do it tonight. I might do it tonight.
We'll see. First pitch of the game.
Just come
right out.
And the pitch.
Hey, how much do you look at the monitor when you're doing TV?
It depends. It's changed since, you know, for my games with ESPN, I probably looked at the monitor more because, and this is inside, but K-Zone emanated from the truck, so there's no delay. So the monitor is live to live. Now, if the monitor is even half a second off, it annoys me and I don't like it. I look at the monitor. But I would say back in the day when I knew the monitor was live to live, meaning what I'm watching on TV is the exact timing representation of what is happening on the field, I will look at it more. Nowadays, technically, probably more so on the road, I'm a little more wary of it. So I look at it and certainly in between stuff to tie everything together. But I would say I used to go off the monitor more on pitches than I do now.
Inside baseball, you're saying that you're the way Marquee is set up now, everything's being produced out of Chicago, so there's a time, there's a slight delay for what you get on the monitor when you're on the road?
It depends. So even at home, for example, K-Zone doesn't come from the truck. It comes from a different place. So if you want a live feed that has the box on it, it's not going to be live. It's not like nobody's is live unless it's coming out of. So you have to have a center field camera that doesn't have the box on it, and then it can be fully live.
You have name dropped one manager already.
Yes.
I was driving around. I think it was last year. You were doing a Diamondbacks game, and you told a story about Torey Revello and text.
Yeah.
That this is just me poking you to tell the story because it's so good.
I was doing Wednesday Night Baseball for ESPN. I think that week it was Monday Night Baseball, and we had back-to-back games. I used to do this segment. It was a walk and talk. It was called 90 Feet. And my producer texts me for a Diamondbacks-Angels game, what are you thinking for 90 Feet? And I text my producer back, I'm thinking about Torey Revello. And I don't hear back from him. I don't think much of it. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to reach out to Torey to set it up. And now I go to my phone to text Torey Revello to set up the interview and realize that what I've actually done is at 11:30 at night sent Torey Revello a text that just says, I'm thinking about Torey Revello. And that's one of those where you're looking at it and your first thought is, no, no. And then I have to send a text that says, sorry about the weird text. Here's what happened. And then when we actually did the interview, his wife's a big Bills fan. He went to UCLA, had a connection with John Wooden. There was a lot of really good stuff. And he's super personable, and I know him well enough. But my final question to him was, because it's just sort of like a quick hitter, what's the creepiest text you've got in the last 6 months? And he handled it marvelously. So the back and forth was this. What's the creepiest text you've gotten in the last 6 months? And I look at him and he goes, you know. You know. And that was it. I have one I think I've told you guys. I told you the Scott Service story from last year.
No. No, I don't know this story.
Okay, so my partner Jim DeShays will from time to time, I don't know whether you heard, but Chicago's windy. And JD will test the wind by throwing a Jim DeShays baseball card out the window. Okay? More often than not, it makes it down to the next level. We're playing the Mariners. It was the game that Kelnick hit the ball into the center field bleachers 7,000 feet. I believe my play-by-play call was, ugh. And in the third inning to test the wind, JD takes his Jim DeShays baseball card out and throws it, and it lands on the field. And we are beside ourselves with, what do we do? Should we show it? We got to show it. This is amazing. We put it on TV. Are we going to get in trouble? We're going to get in trouble. We better not show it. And now we're going back and forth, and then we forget. And it's getaway day. So we have forgotten about the card. Until I get a text from Scott Service. Hey, was going to take George Kirby out in the seventh, walking out to the mound, found this card of Jim DeShays on the field, and he takes a picture of it. And I was like, best text ever.
That's phenomenal. That's so good.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, you brought up something in a roundabout way that I've never talked to you about, and I'm very curious. The same core group of people are in this business, whether you're talking about uniform personnel, people up in the booth, people in the front offices, right? And the wheel kind of goes round and round each year. You strike me, beyond your ability behind the mic, you strike me as just a elite-level relationship builder. How has that helped you in your job? And more importantly, how do you feel like you go about doing that? Because there are people in this business that can be very guarded. Like, we know that, right? Very guarded. Maybe for good reason.
I don't know the first part if I'm an elite level relationship builder, but it's certainly what I'm trying to do. And it's the thing that nourishes me as much as any part. I'm still interested in this sport as much as I was when I was seven. Mm. But beyond that, to get a chance to connect with people, I think I would say that one of my things is I'm probably comfortable being vulnerable and honest. And when I screw stuff up, I cop to it. But I think that in terms of just meeting people, if there's somebody that's interesting, like, it's going to be hard for you to get rid of me. It's just kind of how I am. So I love that part of it. Like, you've hit on the thing that I enjoy so, so much. I love seeing Jerry DePoto and being able to say, hey, you know, I was recruited as a preferred walk-on at William & Mary, and the one game I got to see, you were pitching at the Diamond at VCU. And I love that I'm going to go see Torrey Lovello on our next trip and talk to Mike Hazen. I don't know, man. Those things are important to me. They're important to me as a person. So I think, I mean, heck, I probably not doing a great job of explaining it, but I would say if I would turn it back on you, like, Goldie, how has our relationship grown, or what would your perspective be on that? Because I think that, you know, for the most part, you and I connected and have stayed connected. And I don't know. I think it's just really important to me, and it's a thing I just love about going around. And sometimes it has a little more of a baseball slant, and sometimes it has a little more of a personal slant. And I don't have any problem telling guys that when they said something that was, you know, honest, that I loved it, or telling the truth if they asked me that I didn't love something. I don't know, I feel like the better way I could do it is if you just gave me the list of people and how the connections work. But I don't know. I just have always had the thing. The way I describe it at sometimes to people is, as a five-year-old, if I were to get into an elevator with a bunch of adults, I was the type of kid that would, like, look around and be like, hey, how you doing?
Sure. When Aaron and I talk about you, we think you are the perfect mix of the mechanics are great, the information's great, the humor. It's like the whole package. How do you get ready for a game? What do you do?
I have stretches where I'm a bit of a crazy person in terms of just, you know, you guys know at this point, there's an element of preparing for broadcast in today's day and age in 2020. It's like reaching the end of the internet. There's just always going to be something else that you're going to be able to find. And so you just got to be able to let go in terms of being prepared and feeling prepared. I'm going to be prepared. Sometimes you can get a little stuck in that. What are the things that I do to feel prepared? I think that I would just say this, that I think without realizing it, every broadcaster, they're an editor. You're using your own guide for what you think is interesting. So why do I think I'm good at this? Yes, I will say the egotistical thing. I think I have a good idea of what is interesting, and I let that guide me. And so I let that guide me in my preparation as it relates to, hey, Seiya Suzuki, have you ever met through his interpreter? Have you ever met Ichiro? I met him last night for the first time. It was a thrill, blah, blah, blah. Dansby Swanson, how long have you used that glove? This is year five. Nico Horner, how long have you used your glove? I break in two new every year. Whatever. But I'm just saying, you try to use the stuff that just speaks to you. And I like the nerd stuff because whereas I cop to at times sucking the fun out of sports, I'll admit it, it's given me another entree into finding the stuff that people used to make up. You know, why is player X swinging the bat better? Because he doesn't, you know, because he's got player Y behind him compared to last year. And then you see, well, last year with no protection, he got the same amount of fastballs in the zone and the same amount of fastballs. Like, just for example. Mm-hmm. So there's no data that's showing you, I mean, that's simplistic, but that's showing you that there actually is. I just like being able to, the knowables are greater. And it's also one of the things I love about this sport. The pitcher-batter confrontation is easier to isolate performance than in any other sport. So for as long as we have watching some NBA right now, man, you could sit there till you're blue in the face and try and figure out, is Steve Nash making Sean Marion better? Or is Sean Marion maybe helping Steve Nash a little bit and we just haven't been able to figure it out? But when you're at the plate and you're facing that guy, you're at the plate and you're facing that guy. And so I think that you have a better idea in terms of performance of who's good in this sport because of the numbers, and I love that.
Yeah. One last one. I am disappointed that I see your real name on the coffee cup. I would think you would use something a little more random.
I use John.
Oh, they probably can't process Boog.
No.
Because it probably sounds like something else, to be honest.
Well, I never, yeah, it's true, and I never, ever, ever introduced myself as Boog, ever.
Where'd it come from?
Boog Powell. I went and worked at the All Sports radio station in Miami in 1993, and that was the first, the Marlins were on that station, and I went and trained as a board op on the morning show. And one of the guys on that show was Dave Lamont, and he was from the Baltimore area, and he saw me, and he said, "You look like Boog Powell." And the next day over John Shambi, they had taped Boog Powell, and it just stuck. So I was 22 years old. So it's just one of those things that – and I would say that working inside the game, it was a good thing because scouts – baseball people would always remember it. So, yeah. So it's actually Jonathan, by the way. That's what all the girls from grade school would call me.
Well, fortunately, I mean, there's nothing about you that's memorable at all, except for Boog. So thank goodness you got that.
Fair enough.
Yeah, Jonathan, this has been wonderful.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That was a really fun conversation with the great voice of the Cubs and ESPN Radio, everything else. One of the great voices in the game we have now. It's fun to hear about how he goes about it a little bit. Also, the Torey Lovello story is one of my all-time favorites, so it was fun to hear that on our air as well. Speaking of great stories, perhaps the greatest story that's been told on our air, coming up next with Jackie Robinson Day tomorrow, we're going to revisit a conversation with the great Vin Scully. We'll do that when we return right after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to Trident Talk on the Seattle Mariners Radio Network.
Jackie Robinson's breaking of the color barrier wasn't just a part of the Civil Rights Movement. It was the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement. 1947. That is well before those more noted civil rights occurrences. That is before Brown versus the Board of Education. Mm-hmm. That is before Rosa Parks' refusal to move to the back of the bus. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a sophomore at Morehouse College when Robinson signed that contract to play in the Dodgers organization. President Truman would not integrate the armed forces until a year after Jackie. So for all intents and purposes, this is what started the ball of social progress rolling in our country, baseball. And our country literally jumped on the coattail of baseball. Mm-hmm. And so even though baseball had been vilified for not allowing blacks to play in the major leagues, when it opened its door, our country followed suit. It speaks to the reverence that baseball held and still holds in our society.
The great Bob Kendrick from the Negro Leagues Museum in Kansas City. He is just the absolute best. Great to hear from Bob Kendrick as we celebrate Jackie Robinson Day coming up tomorrow. Mariners will take on the Reds tomorrow. 6:42, first pitch here from T-Mobile Park. In the meantime, we're going to celebrate Jackie Robinson Day today by replaying a conversation with Vince Scully. This was a few years ago with the Mariners in Los Angeles for Jackie Robinson Day. Aaron Goldsmith sat down with the great Vince Scully.
Vin, this day every year is a special day for everybody involved in baseball, but it must be even more special for you. What are your emotions like on the 15th of April every season?
Well, because I go back so far with the ball club, because I knew Jackie reasonably well, I also am thrilled when Rachel shows up because I have nothing but the best and highest regard for her. So it brings back the memory not only of Jackie, but what happens is it brings back the memory of all those other players who played with him and against him. I first met him in spring training of 1950. So he'd already been up a couple of years. And the first road trip, actually the end of the spring training, we left Vero Beach to go to New York by way of Texas. So that's quite a trip. And we lived on trains and would get to a hotel to take a shower and move on. And it brought the team together. And probably one of the great things that happened to Jackie and for Jackie was the thought that Mr. Rickey had about Vero Beach. Vero Beach was a former naval air station, and the Dodgers were able to lease it for $1 a year from the government. And the best part about it was, for those black players who eventually came into the organization, there was nowhere to go. They couldn't go to any of the cities, really, in and around Vero Beach, except for one small town called Gifford. And it was a black city, really, a black community, mostly all black people who worked in the area. So the only place a black Dodger could go would be to Gifford. And there wasn't anything. There was a pool hall there. I know that. And I know some of them shot pool. But that's about all they had. The positive about that was being restricted on campus, so to speak, brought us all together, much more so than it would be today. Today, they'd be gone as soon as practice is over. But living in Vero Beach at Dodger Town, you had to amuse yourself with others. And that brought Jackie very close to all of his teammates, along with Roy Campanella and Don Newcomb. I can remember as a kid broadcaster after dinner, sitting outside the dining room, and Roy Campanella would sit on a little wooden bench. We eventually had a sign, Campy's Bullpen. And Campy would sit and tell stories, and the rest of us would sit around and ask him, and he would talk about the so-called, in those days, Negro Leagues. And Roy would talk about playing three games in three different cities in one day. But the point of it is it brought us so much closer together. And I think it eased Jackie's entry into organized ball, or at least the majors.
On the broadcast tonight, Dodgers fans will be able to hear you talk about countless stories about Jackie Robinson. What is your favorite Jackie Robinson story?
Well, I'm not sure if it's my favorite, but it's certainly appropriate for tonight. We were on the road in Cincinnati many, many years ago in the very early 50s. And although Jackie had received threatening mail of sorts, the one when we were going to Cincinnati was taken very, very seriously. And there was a tremendous police presence on the rooftops of the ballpark, on the roof of the old laundry, which was back of left field, on the roof of the post office, which was down the right field line. They were everywhere. It was that serious. And before the game, they had the usual team meeting, but there was a lot of tension in the air. We were all aware of the possible threat. And while all the players sat there with the coach and the managers, everybody, we had a left fielder named Gene Hermansky, who was from Brooklyn. Big, blonde, good-natured, happy-go-lucky guy. And the room was pretty quiet. And all of a sudden, Hermansky said, "I've got it." And everybody kind of straightened up and looked at him and said, "What?" And Gene said, "We'll all wear number 42, and nobody will know which one is Jackie." Well, it broke up the room. It broke the tension. And little did we know that Gene's suggestion would eventually come to pass, because tonight, like Gene said, everybody will wear number 42. And I think that's probably my favorite story.
That's a wonderful story. Vin, you're such a gentleman with your time. We appreciate it so much. And you're such a gentleman, you won't let me call you Mr. Scully. So with that in mind, Vin, thank you for your time. It's been an absolute honor.
Aaron, thank you very much for the privilege of talking to the good folks up in Seattle.
I always enjoy revisiting that story from the late, great Vin Scully. We'll come back. We've spoken to Tyson Miller already for the Mariners. We'll hear from another Miller, Bryce Miller, coming up as Trident Talk continues right after this.
You're listening to Trident Talk on the Seattle Mariners Radio Network.
3-2 pitch. One more time here to Bush. Here it comes. Swing and a miss. Struck him out with a sinker. Fourth strikeout. That is five consecutive retired.
It's Trident Talk, brought to you by Chevy Silverado and the all-new Silverado HD. Great to have you with us this afternoon. Mariners and Cubs, game three of the series coming up in a few moments. Bryce Miller, again, brilliant against the Cubs. He is off to a great start this year. At one point, 14 scoreless innings in a row. Shannon Dreher caught up with Bryce Miller recently to talk about what has been a great start to the season for the Mariners starter.
We see the array of pitches that you have, the execution. We know the work that you have put in on them. Where would you say, I mean, if you think back to a year ago, you weren't quite called up, we'll pretend you were, but the Bryce Miller who arrived in Seattle a year ago as a pitcher, who was he as compared to right now?
I'd say quite a bit different. I think last year, really the whole year, I was kind of searching for like what was going to work for me, like besides the fastball. And like I had success last year, but it was mainly because of the fastball, and like whenever I got in trouble, like I didn't really know what to do. Like last year I threw like seven different pitches. I was like trying everything, whereas now, like, I feel like I'm confident in everything that I have, and like it just comes down to executing. So it takes the, like last year, if the game went wrong, then like the bullpen felt like I had to change everything and try to figure something out, whereas now it's like I have all the stuff, I just have to execute. So it, like, the confidence level is quite a bit higher, and like I feel really good with where I'm at.
You had a lot of sliders. How did you kind of evolve to what you have right now from what you had when you came up last year?
I mean,
slider wise, I know they're the other pitches, but
I'm still throwing really both the same sliders that I threw last year. I'm throwing the gyro and I'm throwing the sweeper, but the main change was like trying to get the release height on the sweeper back up to where the fastball is. And it's a lot better than it was last year, like release height wise, and like just knowing that I can throw that pitch early or late, like for strikes, is big. Last year it kind of felt like whenever I threw the sweeper, it was like they knew it was coming. They didn't really swing that much last year on it, but they could still see it. So that was the main change there. Like, I'm still throwing both the exact same pitches. I'm just telling myself it's a curveball instead of a sweeper so that I can get my release height up.
I mean, is that tough to get that? Is that a lot of work to get back to where that is? Or is that just as easy as telling yourself it's your curveball to get to the same spot?
It took a little adjustment, but it wasn't too hard. It's just, like, through the minor leagues, I was trying to make it move sideways, and, like, throughout a full season of doing that, it just kind of lowered my release height. And it's something that, like, I couldn't really change in season without losing the command. So, it took a month or so of bullpens just to get it back up, but I like where it's at.
When you go into a start, you say you have all these weapons. Your plan A is usually using how many of those weapons, and what happens if one of those, like last night, was that your plan A?
Yeah, I mean, I threw more heaters and yesterday than I did in Milwaukee, but it's just, you know, it depends on the lineup, and it depends how the game's going. But yeah, the plan A is always going to be to attack with the heater and then adjust off of it. So it, especially on lineups that aren't going to load lefties, like it, the plan A for the for righties is pretty simple. Heaters up, sinkers down, splitters down, sliders down. So it's pretty easy.
And that's why we saw a little bit more of the sinker last night?
Yeah, yeah. There's more righties, so I could throw more sinkers for sure.
All right. We also saw, and this was fun, like if enough isn't enough, you decided you had to add a little bit of a twist and you had the little hesitation. Where did that come from?
I've been, ever since college, my college coach had me doing that in all my bullpens and stuff, so I've kind of kept it. I do it every bullpen and every pregame bullpen. It's just like four fastballs to start the bullpen just to keep me in line and that kind of stuff. But I've been doing it for 5 years now. So like Woody was like, hey, you do this every day and like you execute the heater up, you might as well try it in the game. So been thinking about it. I figured it was a good time, so I did it. But it worked. It was fun.
It felt the way it should.
Yeah, yeah.
So we could see that more.
Yeah, I think I'm going to keep playing with it. It's, I mean, if I can mess with their timing and keep them even more off balance, like, and as long as I can execute the pitch, like, I'm good with it.
It's a lot of fun for you, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I try to have fun every day. But it's fun learning a new pitch and seeing it have success and like just seeing like the work that I put in result in success as well. It's fun.
Well, check in with the splitter. It was funny in spring training. You were like, I have to just use it a little bit to start with, and then you had a great outing with it. And I want to throw this a lot, and now you're throwing it. It seems an appropriate manner. Yeah. Is that right where your other pitches are right now?
Yeah, I think it's been good. I threw 20 last week in Milwaukee. I think I threw like 11 last night or 12. It's just like I said, it just depends on the lineup and how the game's going and how much we're going to use it. But I feel really good with it. I'm commanding it well, and my arm feels good, so I'm good with however many we need to throw.
How important is Cal to what you do?
He's huge. He prepares like better than anybody. I trust in whatever pitch he calls is the right pitch, and he works his butt off back there, so it's really fun pitching to him.
How much did you shake him off?
I actually tried to shake him off last night, and then he shook me off. He shook off my shake, so I wanted a splitter, and I threw a fastball, and it worked. I got a foul ball, like he fouled it back, so then we went to the splitter the next pitch, so I guess we compromised.
Okay, so that literally you're no-no, and he's literally shaking his head no-no?
Yeah, I shook once, and then I said yes to a splitter, and then he said no, and then he called fastball. I'm like, all right, I guess I'll throw fastball. But he gave it to me the next pitch. I threw a splitter, so.
You might have to talk to Logan about that one.
Yeah, I tried to shake. He said no. Well, I mean, he's got the chart, and he's got all the stuff on his wrist. So, like I said, I trust what he's calling.
Any other tricks you're working on right now?
No, I think it's all my tricks. I might come up with some more as the year goes on, but we'll see.
You got to throw an Aphis at some point. You absolutely have to.
Just toss one in there. Yeah, it'd be fun. I've seen Dylan Cease. He's got a changeup. He's throwing at like 62. So I don't really know why he's doing that, but it looks funny.
Well, I mean, if George could throw a knuckleball at the end of the year, I expect something from you. Bryce, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's so fun. I could listen to Bryce Miller talk about pitching all day. That is such a fun conversation. Brought to you by Jack's Grill. Three locations. Issaquah, West Seattle. Laurelhurst, known for the greatest steaks in your neighborhood. For a great dining experience, a friendly family atmosphere at a friendly price, make plans to stop by Jack's Grill.